This is Pam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Ian Shamandi, a co-founder and chief purpose officer at Purpose U and co-founder of Blueprint. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks. And you?
I'm doing fine. Want to let people know we are a featured podcast on the Newsly Network. You see the icon up there says listen on Newsly. For those of you who don't know about that platform, you can use the coupon code of Ghost and check that out. That's an audio-only platform. This episode will be on Newsly later tonight. So we do also have your URL for purposeu.co. That will be fully clickable for anybody who wants to click on that. So once we're published, you'll be able to click through, but if that will be up for the time of the show. And then what we're going to talk about today is the idea of like how to live a life of meaning and purpose. But before we get to that, we always ask all of our guests these two questions. What motivates you and why do you do what you do?
I've experienced the result myself. That's one thing. So I know the value. The other thing is when people discover their purpose, it is such an enlightening experience, such a transformative experience for them. And I get a huge dopamine hit out of being the person who helped them get there. It's very selfish. Right. And also so that, you know, that's ego. And I would say that I have a real belief about purpose and its tangible value in life to an individual and to a business as well. And I know that when most people hear purpose, they might, you know, nod their head. Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But they don't actually know what it is. They got this idea, right? But they don't actually know what it is. And I think most people see it as like this woo-woo or need-to-have thing because they have never experienced or had explained to them the mechanics of how it works and the tangible benefit of those mechanics of how it works. And so I'm sort of on a mission to teach the world about those mechanics so that they will not see this as woo-woo and so that they'll see it as essential.
So they can kind of self-actualize so people can actually, a lot of times, like if you're an artist, you purposely set up your life where people tell you, oh, you shouldn't do that because that's not, how do you know you're going to make money? But you do something because you're passionate, right? You do it because you feel like that's what I should do. You're a screenwriter, you're an actor, you're a painter. You feel the passion to do that and not to sit in, you know, in the cubicle because you want to be able to put your stamp on the world.
In Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, people might hear what you just said. You want to put your stamp on the world. And they may think, who am I to put my stamp on the world? Right? I'm no, you know, Paul McCartney. I'm no Gandhi, I'm no, you know, whatever. But the thing is, you do have one thing that's really, really important in common with all those great people. And that is, like them, you have something at your essence that makes you uniquely remarkable. Right?
There's a lot of people have that, right? But they just don't tap into it because they don't believe in it.
Well, it's not a lot of people have it. Everybody has it. Every single person has something at their core that makes them uniquely remarkable, right? It's their superpower. And wouldn't you love to be able to articulate your superpower? I mean, you have a general notion of things that you're strong at and things that you're weak at. But if you could articulate in 7 words or less what your superpower is, how great would that be? Because now that you know what it is, now you can call it up and use it anytime you want, rather than not knowing it's there and it doing its work in the background. Because it's always there, right? It's been there since you were born. But you know, it's been doing its best to keep you on the straight and narrow, but because you don't know what it is, you know, that's a bit of a windy road. Whereas if you knew what it was, then you could stay very focused. And what you're staying focused on is things that are aligned with who you are. So it's a good focus.
Yeah, it's that idea, like people talk about foo-foo because, you know, I'm a Buddhist and I'm a musician, I'm an artist, I'm a producer, but I also have a day job as a software designer. But the thing is, what I've been able to do is find an alignment with like my frequency, like through the law of attraction, right? So I'm a creative person. It goes through all the things I do. And so I tend to believe in stream of consciousness and to believe in, you know, being able to do something kind of in a flow state and trusting myself, which I think a lot of people have that flow state. You see an athlete that's done 10,000 hours of practice. They get that 3-point shot to get the hole in one because they've done the work and now they don't have to doubt themselves. I think a lot of people have done the work, but then they doubt that they can do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a colleague and she was a CEO at the time of this conversation, right? We were out for a drink. And she's explaining to me that she's bored. I said, "Why are you bored?" She said, "Well, when I joined this company 5 years ago, it was a mess. And I had to turn it around. I had to put my head down. I had to put the blinkers on. And I just had to focus on the task at hand and fix that business. But now it's running itself. And I'm bored." I said, and she said, I think I got to look for my next engagement. I said, "Cool." She said, no. "I'm scared to death." I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "I feel like the world has passed me by. I had my head down. And there was all this stuff going on. And while I had my head down doing my job, I lost 5 years. I don't know if my skills are relevant anymore. I don't know if there's a place for me anymore." This was like her third CEO gig. This woman graduated from high school when she was 16. She had an honors MBA by the time she was 20. So, you know, you can see that the idea that she would have lost her confidence is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Reason she did is because she's human. And that's what we humans do, right?
Well, we have this the imposter syndrome, even though we're in something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as a producer, I deal with musicians all the time that they have the stage self and then they have the real self. And you'd be surprised how shy and how reserved and how unsure they are when they're in the studio versus being on the stage. And you're like, "Wow, is this the same person that's on the stage?" It's like, I can't understand it because like they're doubting something they've been doing for 20 years, 30 years, and they don't have to do it. Yeah. But then they doubt it.
When are they going to discover that I'm a pretender? It's like, "No, Paul McCartney, we're never going to discover that you're a pretender because you're not a pretender." But so we're at an inflection point in this example because she's lost her confidence. And why did she lose her confidence? The reason is this is what we call a trigger event, right? So changing careers, whether by choice or by force, is a trigger event. Because what it does is it creates uncertainty about your future. That's the defining characteristic. Two qualities of a trigger event. One, it creates uncertainty about the future. And two, that uncertainty causes anxiety. So even when you decide to leave a job on your own, and even when you've already got the next gig sitting there waiting for you, you've never worked there before. You don't know those people. You don't know, like, are they going to discover that you're an imposter? How am I going to get them on side? What if I don't? What if everybody there is smarter than me? You know, uncertainty, uncertainty, uncertainty. Questions without answers. Anxiety. So, you know, other trigger events are retirement, divorce, empty nest, graduation of all things, right? You think graduation, happy time, congratulations. A month ago, I'm in line at the supermarket, and there's two mothers behind me talking about the crisis of graduation. Their kids are coming home from university with a degree. Oh no, oh no, they say, the crisis of graduation. The kid, their crisis is, oh, I had such a nice, quiet, empty nest, and now the kids coming home to disrupt my life. Are they going to get a job? Are they going to get a good job? Are they going to live off me for the rest of my life? Are they going to live in my basement for the rest of my life? The kid, oh my God, the bubble of childhood has been burst, and now I have to be an adult. What does that even mean? You know, so the crisis of graduation, the trigger event of graduation, causing uncertainty about the future, which creates anxiety. And of course, what mitigates the anxiety is creating clarity about the future. So the secret about purpose is that it's just a decision-making tool. It's a tool for helping you make better decisions. Have I already said what the definition of purpose is? I'm sorry, I forgot.
I don't think we went until you talked around it, but I don't think you defined like your vision of what it is. You said okay, a lot of people don't know what it is.
Right. Define your terms, right? So let me jump to that. And then can you put a place mark in where we are? Because I know I'm going to forget. So part of my frustration with the definition of purpose is that it's usually one of two things. If you ask 100 people on the street what the definition of purpose is, most of them will probably say a variation of why I exist, right? But then if you ask the question, why do you exist? They won't have an answer, but they'll never have an answer. How do you answer that question? It's too big, it's too vague, it's too, you know. And then the other bucket is answers that are so convoluted or academic, you don't even know. you read it three times and you still don't know what the heck it is, right? So my purpose mentor, famous painter, Pablo Picasso, never met the guy, of course, but he said, the meaning of life is to find your gift and your purpose is to share it with the world. So I just rephrase him a bit and combine those two statements to say your purpose is to find your gift and share it with the world. And what that means is that your purpose is your gift, right? It's not something woo-woo. It's the one thing that makes you uniquely remarkable. That's your gift. Bruce Springsteen, what's his gift? Music, songwriting? No, those are the manifestations of his gift. I don't know how you define his gift, but just know a guy like Bruce Springsteen, he has a gift that is not music. It's just manifested through music. You have a gift, and everything that you do, the thing that makes you uniquely remarkable, everything is a manifestation of that. So my definition of purpose is that one thing at your core, at your essence, that makes you uniquely remarkable. And our standard for defining it has to be done in 7 words or less. And that sounds like, you know, a pretty tough road to hoe, and it is. It takes time to dig that deep. But it's usually 2 or 3 or 4 words, right? So we're not even straining to get it under 7 words. It just comes out naturally as a part of a disciplined step-by-step process. It just comes out naturally. It is the description we like to use is it's clear, concise, and compelling.
So you like to, I guess your strategy with people is to get them to kind of go to Pablo Picasso's general concept of what purpose is at a high level.
Right.
And like you said, with Bruce Springsteen, it's not as obvious as saying he's a singer-songwriter. I tend to talk about like people who are creators and they got this like spark And it doesn't really matter what art it is, or, you know, what it could be science. It could be, you know, all different. It could be like somebody who's a Renaissance person, right? So they could have the ability to do scientific stuff. And they could have the ability to do art. So they have the left and the right brain and the creative in both. And so there's a lot of people that can channel maybe one or the other or both or a hybrid. And so it's just like what you're able to kind of channel. Because I feel like, since I'm a Buddhist, I feel there's like energy, there's the law of attraction, and people align with the frequency that they're in or they're on. And your frequency could change over time. You could change to a different person. Your person that's 18 versus 25 is 30, 70. It might be some spark of the same person, but you evolve.
You do evolve, but you're the same person at the same time.
Yeah.
Think of yourself as an 8-year-old. As a 12-year-old, as an 18-year-old, many of us still do think of ourselves as an old marketing truism, I guess, is that if you want to advertise to a target group, use the music they were listening to when they were 18. I wanted to say about we were talking about the definition. It's what makes you uniquely remarkable. And I was talking before about the mechanics, the actual guts of how the purpose machine works, you know, the carburetor and the pistons and all of that stuff. And here's how it works is that, you know, we were talking about Bruce Springsteen, you were talking about being creative, music, songwriting, that sort of thing. That is not your purpose. That is an example of your talents. Remember, I talked about beliefs, wants, and talents, right? The components of purpose. So your talents can be ones that you're born with, and they can be ones that you develop over time. And certainly music falls into both of those categories. But that is a component part of purpose. There's your beliefs, everything that you believe in, you know, in life. There's your wants, everything you desire, and your talents. So as a creative person, as a musician, in those three things, you're just very heavy on the talents, right? But the other three things need to be considered in terms of figuring out your purpose. And that's the way the course works, right? So what you'll do, and I'm a little bit of inside ball here. I'm so excited about what the course is becoming because we built it out. We did a test cohort in the fall. We got tons of great feedback, major changes to the course, but something that happened in the interim is that the ability to build in AI became just much more practical. And so that's what we've been doing. And I got to tell you, with the AI built in, we call the AI assistant, we call it Wordsmith, because it helps you find the words. But the two of you are going to have a ball working through this process. So what I get you to do is identify two accomplishments that you're proud of in your life, hopefully one for work and one from non-work. And then I take you through a step-by-step process of deconstructing those two accomplishments until at the end, what falls out, you know, what titrates out at the bottom is a list of your beliefs, wants, and talents. And then from there, we say, okay, now we have, you know, the magic sort of elemental ingredients. Let's throw those into, you know, let's get Wordsmith involved, throw those into AI and start playing games until somehow, somewhere, and I, you know, lead you through a process of doing that, your purpose pops out and you go, oh, there it is. That's me. That's what I want to be. Yep, that's what I am. And you can look back to your 10 years old. You go, yeah, that's what I was back then. Yeah, I was doing that stuff back then.
So the purpose is always kind of built on the foundation of like your spirit and your soul and your a lot of your Not the things that a lot of people want, the elevator pitch, like you're going to be a surgeon, right? You're going to be an attorney. You're going to be a congressman. Like they think that that's that's my purpose. But that's like just the kind of resume LinkedIn purpose.
Yeah. So what I would say to that surgeon, if you think your purpose is to be a surgeon, then think about this question as a little mental exercise. If being a surgeon is a means to the end, what's your end purpose? And then that question shunts being a surgeon, as, you know, as honorable as it is, but it shunts it into being an execution of your purpose. It is your living manifestation of that purpose.
So would the purpose be like to heal people?
No, no, it'll be, okay, let me tell you, so I gave you the one example. I was telling you about my friend. That was the story I was supposed to finish.
So yeah, she was the CEO.
Yeah, the CEO. Okay, so just a reminder, she loves companies that are in great distress. She loves turning them around. That's what she is. She's a turnaround artist. You give her a good company and she's just not smart. Why? She's not engaged. The worse condition the company is in, the smarter she gets, because the more it engages her. So I said to her, you know, I've got this mental image of this platoon, or I don't know, military, so whatever, but these, you know, the soldiers, there's a whole bunch of them, and they've just been through hell. And now they're facing a minefield, and there's a new commander standing in front of them. And you're the new commander in your full battle gear, helmet, the whole bit. And they're all like weary and freaked out and scared. And you stand in front of them and you calmly say, "Don't worry, I have a plan. I will get you across this minefield and I'll get you safely to the other side." And they just go, "Oh my God, thank God. Thank God, that's what we need. That's what we're like, the cool, calm, confident leader in this time of distress. Tell us what to do." And I said, and she said, yeah, I like that metaphor. And I said, and so, you know, it leads me to the expression, leading safely through the minefield. That's what you're all about in your personal life, in your business life, everywhere. You are about leading safely through the minefield. And if there's no minefield, then you're just sort of sitting back disengaged. And she said, yeah, that's it. I love that. So, you know, how does this work for her then as a decision-making tool? Remember, I said purpose at the end of the day is a decision-making tool. Well, she could not have articulated to you before that the kind of company that she loved was a company in distress. But now when the headhunter comes and says, "Hey, it's time for you to step up a level. I've got this great global company. It's doing marvelous. And it needs a new leader." And her response to that is, "No, thanks. I'm not interested. Boring. Successful company. I don't do successful companies. I do troubled companies and make them successful." And, you know, that's a big difference. So in terms of being able to communicate what she wants, she's very clear.
And more aligned with what she really was doing, because maybe she wasn't fully understanding that was, you know, really her reason raising the door. I mean, that's what she does. But yeah, she maybe didn't want to think of it that way. But now you opened her eyes to see that that's the way she should consider. Like, that's what makes her happy. Because not that she couldn't do the other job, but she wouldn't be happy.
Right. No. She could do the other job. The problem is she could do it with both hands tied behind her back. Right. So, yeah. No, she could do the other job. No problem. But she wouldn't be happy. And so, okay, so here's the thing. Remember I said purpose is comprised of your beliefs, wants, and talents. So when you make a decision that's aligned with your purpose, you're making a decision that's aligned with your beliefs, wants, and talents. So if her purpose is leading safely through the minefield, and she chooses to take a role with a successful company, you know, the reason that she would be unhappy very quickly is because she's made a decision that is unaligned with these things that are so elemental to who she is, her beliefs, mm-hmm. wants, and talents.
So it's very similar to the law of attraction and the idea like frequency. Cause like when you pick up, like you go into a room and you pick up the vibes of somebody and they don't, can't really explain it, but this person really doesn't really align with me. And then you further hang out with them and you realize you're actually right. Like they're not aligning with you. They're not even on the same train, they're not in the same zone. And when you start to work on things, if you use that kind of concept of like, I like to write in a kind of stream of consciousness style. If you have people that are very kind of anal about what they want to do, that's not going to work well, because they're going to want to know what the charts are, what the chord chart is, what key they're in. And then you're going to get frustrated because like, I don't work with people like that. I work with people that are more intuitive. Mm-hmm, so if I go around with people, not that I couldn't work with them, but it's going to kind of tick me off and I'm going to get frustrated and I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're walking in to see who you're going to play with and they say, we're very organized, we've got everything charted and, we'll give that to you. And we just, so just play the notes and you're like, there's lots of people. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for that form and structure. And when they hear those kinds of words, they go, ah, perfect. you know what the hell you're doing. You're not a bunch of amateurs, right? Now that same person goes to you and your band and you say, nah, we're kind of vibey. We start with something, we'll figure it out. And then we build on that. And it's like, oh, no, I don't want to play with you. You don't have your ducks in a row. And it's like, right, that's okay that you don't have your ducks in a row, because that's who you are and you make that work.
Yeah, I think people have to be, I think if you get to the truth of who you are, because a lot of times people have beliefs about who they are, but they don't actually know the truth of who they are, because they have all these layers and they haven't really dived into it. And I always talk about poets and looking glass self and the analysis to like, actually the Victorians talk about the looking glass self, to actually look in that mirror and see who is that. And I'm going to dive into it. I'm going to write my epic poem because I'm diving into that, who that is. Right. I'm going to try to pull that out. But if you can't handle that and you've got to put layers then kind of hide it, well, then you're going to be, that's what you choose to do. Are you really ever going to get to the truth?
A lot of time people put layers on themselves is because they just don't know, or there's something missing in them and they need this, this veneer. When you learn your purpose, because your purpose is what makes you uniquely remarkable, or your superpower, it gives you confidence, right? And that's always there. That's always available to you. It's always an asset. And now that you know it and can articulate it, you can call it up at any time, right? So that gives you confidence and that gives you resilience. Because when you get knocked down, you got a tool to help you get back up. And then when you get knocked down again, that tool's still there. It's always there.
Well, that purpose is gonna assist with your mental health, because if you're always kind of getting into the melodrama, you're going down in the dumps, you're kind of like you don't have the tools to know how to deal with adversity. Because a lot of times in music, we have these terms for the type of music I do. There are no bad notes. Comes from like jazz. You look at that missed note as an opportunity, like Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis. Like if I hit the wrong note while I'm doing a fusion piece, I don't have to stop the piece. I can actually have the whole band evolve the piece.
That's right.
Go with that direction. But there are some people that if they were more classically trained to be like, well, that's not the right note. You got to start the whole composition again. It's not the right structure. So if you learn how to take that structure and realize that you could evolve it and you don't have to have a bad note, that you can play in any key and you can adjust the tempos, and it doesn't mean the piece is done, is wrong. It just changed.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's wonderful when you have, again, like-minded people, right? How do you find like-minded people? Well, you got to know your own mind, how to characterize it in order to find like-minded people. But when you do, and you're on guitar and you hit that wrong note, when the bass player hears it, he or she, you know, like if they're like-minded, they're going to play a note that actually completes that note
for it. Goes with it. Yeah, it completes it. It's like harmonic. Yeah. It actually finishes it. It's in the same tonal. Like they totally evolve the song. And you, that's kind of like the nonverbal stuff that happens when you're in a group. And it happens like when you're an athlete, that people just know people. They know their team. And they know if they do this, they're going to react to it. They don't always have to have it in the plan. Right. Mm-hmm. They can, they trust their teammate to kind of read the room. So if you can read the audience, you can read the room, you can read the stage, you can know that even if you have a plan, not that bad to have a plan, but have to be totally, you can be divorced from the plan at any moment. If the world changes, you're able to adjust to that. And it's not a trigger that's going to freak you out.
Well, there's that old cliche, right? Every plan's great until you get punched in the face. the thing about purpose is that it recognizes that you can't be rigid, right? So the difference between purpose and a strategy, for instance, a strategy is the white line going down the middle of the road. Fail to plan, plan to fail. So you come up with a strategy and you stay on that white line because you've defined that as the path to success. Problem is, you got cars and trucks and motorcycles whizzing by you on either side and, you know, rocks that are flowing down the, and wind and all and potholes and all of this stuff. You need the flexibility to juke and jive on that road. What you don't need a middle line that's telling you stay here. You need guardrails that keep you in an area that gives you some room to juke and jive. And that's what purpose does for you. You have the free will to make your own decisions, but it acts as a decision-making assistant to help you make better decisions. And that helps you juke and jive inside those defined parameters.
It seems as simple as like life isn't always going to be the straight line. It's like a wave. It's like the ocean. And, you know, there are going to be waves, right? You're going to be on the crescent. You're going to be on the, you're going to be at certain points on that wave. Mm-hmm. And so it's not always going to be perfect. And so a lot of times what we try to, you know, I think about with a lot of creative people is happy accidents, right? Happy accidents happen in science, happen in art. They happen all the time. They happen almost everywhere. Anything that you can do, and it's whether or not you're willing to accept it, right? Or you're on this perfection kick, because we have so many tools today that we can make something perfect if we want to. We can align it and get it with these all these computer tools to be exactly what we think is perfection, rather than trusting our gut, right? And some of the other things that are more less, they're woo-woo or harder to define. Because like, why not have a little waver in your pitch like Neil Young and actually put it down? And he could actually sing that in like Nashville perfect. But he chooses to actually have the discordant notes in there on purpose because he feels that that's art, right? That's what's reflecting his emotion at the time. And it doesn't need to be perfect pitch.
Do you know that famous line about him going flat? It was when they were doing the Canadian version of did the American singers do We Are the World?
Oh, that one.
Yeah. So there was a Canadian version. It was a different song, but the same intent with all Canadian artists. And you know, Neil Young is Canadian artist, and Robert, the huge producer down in LA. He's also a Canadian. Anyway, he was producing it. Mm-hmm. And it came Neil's time to sing his little solo part. And the producer comes on after it and he says, "Hey, Neil, you went a little flat at the end there." And Neil says, "That's my style, man."
His style is whatever it is at the moment. Because, you know, Crazy Horse can be very punk. It has a punk aesthetic. Yeah. And he could go and be punk or he could be really pure kind of Buffalo Springfield Crosby, Stills, and Nash perfect voice if he wants to. It just depends on if he feels that song that serves the song. If he doesn't feel it serves the song, he's not going to do it.
Yeah, there's not too many people who have stayed as true to their music, you know, authentic to their music as Neil Young for so long.
Yeah, I really respect that because there's like a guy like Dylan and Neil Young, they go wherever they're going to go.
Like, yeah, you know,
Dylan will go and take a band and do a song they didn't rehearse and just throw it on in the live act because he just likes to throw it out. He just likes to cause the chaos because it's like that's the part of, to him, that's the thing. He's like, if I feel that, I'm going to go that way. And, you know, some people freak out. Some people, you know, they know him, who he is. They're just like, okay, that's what he's going to do. I got to handle it. But, you know, the fact that you could be like that has always been amazing to me. I love that type of authentic nature, like authenticity, vulnerability.
Yeah.
And not really caring if the audience is going to dig it or not. It's just like where I am, you know, they'll come to me or they won't.
Yeah. Yeah. Joni Mitchell is like that too. You know, she's made a million albums and her commercial success has been okay, but not great. But as you know, in the industry, she's revered as a god.
Yeah.
And as another one who has stayed so true to, you know, to her authenticity all those years.
It's hard to do that today because there's so many algorithms and so many, you know, kind of tendencies today to just clone what is successful. Right? People think, like, if I'm on Instagram or on social media, if I do that cat video with the same audio, I'm going to get a million views because everybody gets that, right? But how many more of those do you need versus the vulnerability and authenticity of putting out a post that doesn't get anywhere near that, but reaches somebody you wouldn't have expected and you get an opportunity, right? So those metrics don't always map out to being something that will actually help you.
No. I have a feeling that you and I could go on and on about music for a few hours.
Yeah. But I think the thing about purpose, it seems like it makes you more interesting from what you're saying, because if you're not going to just stay on that tried and true path, then you're going to be, you know, an interesting person that has dynamics, like a dynamicism that's going to, you know, it's like, well, if you have somebody that's like kind of a one trick pony, like this is who they are all the time. And it's like, okay, fine. That's who they are. That's they like to stay safe. They like to stay in that zone.
Yeah.
But it's like versus the people who are willing to kind of reinvent or go, maybe it's not reinvention, but it's kind of like that's where they're at.
Or just experimentation.
Yeah.
I talk about three benefits to knowing your purpose, to knowing what it is that makes you uniquely remarkable. And one of them I've already talked about, which is, you know, the confidence. And because once you know your purpose, you can't really unknow it. Or another way of saying that, because you know your superpower, you can't really unknow it. It increases permanently your resilience because now you know you have a tool that you can call up whenever you need it, right? So there's that confidence and sustainability of that confidence. The second thing is it's the ability to design a life of meaning and purpose, to use that short phrase, design a life of meaning and purpose, and then have it guide every decision you make and every action you take, right? So you're getting help along the way. And then the third thing is to tell your story charismatically. And it's the story of your purpose. And when you do that, you have what we call the I want me some of that factor, right? And so when you put your story out there, someone hears and they go, wow, that's cool. I want me some of that. So you become like charismatic because you have a charismatic story. And I think part of the law of attraction, if I understand it, is, you know, how you put yourself out to the universe comes back to you. Well, don't you want to put your best foot forward if that's the case?
Yeah.
Don't you want to put yourself out there?
You don't want to phone it in. You know, what we talk about phoning it in, because you get somebody who's like, well, I'm just going to phone it in, right?
That's right.
And then like, well, that's not really going to bring you a lot. It's like, okay, but if you actually take a risk, right? And it's like a certain level of risk. And there's a phrase that David Bowie pointed out, and I just think it's kind of interesting because he said, as an artist, I like to tread water. I like to put myself in places where I'm going to tread water. Where like, I'll go sing with Luther Vandross, and I know he can sing better than me, right? I'll go play with Stevie Ray Vaughan. I know he can play guitar better than me. I'll go change my genre, change my persona. Even though I made $1 million with this, I'll go into something that doesn't even make anywhere near it, because I want to build up some credibility and try something I'm not exactly the best at. Well, to see where I can go. You know, that's what he seemed to do in his career.
I would say folks like that, even if they cannot articulate it, they're more in tune with their purpose, right? So you take two people who are not in tune with their purpose. I think somebody like Bowie, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, you know, any of the great songwriters, I think that they are more intuitively in tune with their purpose than the average person is. And then they manifest it through their art.
Yeah. And it's hard for some folks to get in that kind of mind frame or that, you know, mindset, because there is risk involved. Like, there is a certain level of risk involved, but I think there's nothing risk-free in life. And if you play it safe and you phone it in, you're not gonna, you know, it's like you could be in a codependency, right? And you could be comfortable in that codependency because it's predictable and you know what's going to happen, but you're really not moving forward and you're not happy. Like, you might be existing, but you're not happy.
Yeah.
So one of the things I was looking at in terms of like purpose, it seems like it makes sense. It will make you more employable if you know your purpose.
Well,
then, like, we've been talking about that kind of overall, but I mean, like, kind of bringing it down to the like, if you go through your course and you start to, you know, define yourself, it's actually going to have a defined benefit.
You brought up a really good point, right? Which is the telling of your story. And that's the last step in the process of the course, is to actually tell your story. And there's a number of building blocks for that I lead you through. But what it culminates in is a resume, because a resume is a business version of your story. And I've always thought resumes were stupid, but I didn't have a better idea. But and here's why they're stupid, right? Because you know the process of looking at a bunch of stack of resumes, right? You got a stack in front of you, and it goes like this. No, no. No, no. Oh, that's interesting. No, no. Right. That's how long you get to make an impression.
Time. Yeah. It's almost like if you know, if you actually talk to the person, you're probably going to get something that wasn't on the page, but you won't even talk to them if they don't have the right stuff on the page.
No. So the point I want to make is that your value in a resume is hidden. It's hidden in a bunch of gobbledygook. And so the structure of a traditional resume is essentially, here's all the great stuff that I've done in the past. I've redesigned the resume. And my resume says, here's the magic I'm bringing to the table in the future. Right? Or here's the magic I will be bringing to your table should you have the good judgment to hire me. And but what it does is the resume pulls from all the work that we had done prior to come up with your purpose. And it runs all through your resume. And this is only one page, by the way. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if you attach 100 pages to that one page. Just do not exceed one page in the resume that I take you through, because it tells a nice, clean, crisp story of the magic that you're going to bring to the table. Now, I was working with a university president, And in 5 years, she's going to go out looking for her final position. And she knows what she wants. But she wanted to define her purpose so that in the 5 years leading up to when she does that, she's laying the foundation, telling the story, building up the credentials of a person who's defined as this in 7 words or less, right? And when it came time at the end to consolidate it in a resume, she said, well, I'm not going to need a resume for 5 years, so I don't think we need to do this. I said, bear with me. Just go through the process. Trust the process. That's one of my rules for doing the process. And when we were done, she said, I love this. I get asked to do speaking gigs all the time. They always ask me for a bio, and I send this insipid thing. I'm sending this in the future. Because she loved the story it told of herself as a career professional. And so that's the last thing that we do is we say, okay, you've done all this great work. Now let's consolidate it into a single story here on your resume. And that's what we do in the last step in the process in the course. So you get that newly designed resume as part of it.
I think that's really vital because like a lot of times people don't know, the first thing about trying to update a resume and make it relevant based on the way things are going today in the world. And so this is the first time I've heard somebody have your approach, which I think is really interesting. I've talked to thousands of people on my podcast, and I have not heard your approach, which I find is very, very interesting because it's not an approach I've heard before, which is unique because we're living in a world that doesn't sometimes have new ideas. But your idea feels new to me, at least the way you're presenting it, which
right.
I think is really important for people to check out. And we are near the end of our podcast because we do have another one, but I want to let people know, like, if they click on your link, is that how they get in touch with you? Everything about what you want to do at Purpose U is on that link?
No. No. So the course is launching around mid-June. So if you go to that link now, what you'll find is a landing page that says coming soon.
Oh, coming soon. Okay.
Leave us your email and you'll be the first to know when we launch.
Okay. There is an email form so people can sign up. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's good. So we do encourage folks to click the URLs of the guests that we have on. And again, that's www.purposeu.co. That will be fully clickable when we're published. We're just on Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. We'll be on all the major podcast platforms where you can listen to or watch a podcast by tomorrow. And I want to thank you for being a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Have a great night.
You too.